For March the 10th, 2017, we talk about Horizon Zero Dawn, Destiny 2 character import woes, and we ask you about your best social game memories. Welcome to Level 187. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I'm always forgetting the way the show begins, because that's what happens when you have, you know,
as 30 of them.
Yeah, pretty much. It was a weird moment of like stage fright, actually. Like, I realized you guys were waiting for me. Yeah, I don't know.
I can't take the responsibility.
and then drop the microphone, run away, which is weird because it's on a stand, so I'd have to take it and then like, well, I can't even
dismantle it.
I can't even ram it into my desk because it's up too high. Let me see. Yeah, no, I can't even.
That's okay. There's a whole product line there of ballistic microphone stands that you cannot knock over as hard as you try.
Oh, weebles and it wobbles. But
yes, but it will not fall down.
As opposed to the catch box, which is a microphone that is designed to just be thrown around.
Hmm.
So
what
I'm hearing is we need to get a secondary microphone for Cole so they can drop it at any given time.
I think that seems legit.
Okay. Do you guys want to wait while I set that up? No, I'm not going to do that.
Make it a Patreon goal. Yeah.
It'll come from the same slush fund as Jala's flipping table.
You know, you would think, hey, tables are, you know, pretty cheap, especially like a card table. You just get her one every time. No, we keep on repairing that same table.
Mm-hmm. It's costly.
Yeah, it's costly. It barely stands anymore. It's not like you can't legally call it a surface now.
Which makes Jala so mad that she would flip a table, but she can't.
Yeah. Just we have to make do, you know? We have to make do with the tables we have. You go to war with the tables you have, is what Rumsfeld said, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I don't.
Probably several people.
Yeah,
I always say keep your friends close, but keep your tables closer.
That's a Ben original. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're just trying to get around the fact that this is episode 187, which means that one of us is going to get popped for a homicide. So watch out for that.
Watch out for bullets.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, the catch box.
That's the darker, grittier reboot of Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yep. Uh-huh. It's all shooters all the time. Episode 1 is about Black for the PS2, a game that I wish you could run on a modern system because I actually like that game a lot.
What is the story with that? Like,
it's just a weird like EA licensing thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I just know I think of it as the game that had like really striking ads in Game Informer.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, just like the ads were just like just rooms full of bullet shells or bullet casings.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Is it apparent that there's nothing really huge going on right now?
It's a banterless week, perhaps.
No, it's not entirely banterless. This all qualifies as banter. I believe we're gonna have to go to
banter
the judges.
About no banter.
Maybe. Yeah, but just we can just pull a Seinfeld with it. Anybody have any stories from the past week?
I got a little one that I won't that hopefully doesn't go into the grind. I played a third game of Magic today, and I'm 2-1 in my group. So
oh shit,
that's been fun. Yeah, dude,
nice.
So I got the bug. I'll probably do another draft after this one. I think the last game that I'll play will be sometime this week. So
it was only a matter of time until they got one of us. Ben, you need to bite down on the cyanide pill, break your tooth.
Okay. And
says patient zero for Hearthstone.
I'm the card game purist. There can be no other games than Hearthstone. So
Hearthstone came after,
and they don't even have physical cards.
Yeah.
All right. You know, stay off cyanide for now.
I'll just put the cyanide pill on my table and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Put it in an ice cube. And that way it'll,
I'll swallow it. Oh, no. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So,
I actually do have something a little bit funny that happened.
Yeah.
So I got a call. My resume was found by some like IT staffing firm, and you know, went through an interview, technical interview with them, which was a total of 10 minutes long, and you know, was accepted, and just the whole thing was super sketch. So then I'm talking with the person who I guess was my recruiter or whatever, and they're talking about basically while you go and you get, you know, 6 to 10 weeks of training, and while you're there you have to live in their facilities, and in between jobs you have to live there, and after 6 week training they'll help you get, their marketing department will help you get jobs that require 5 years of experience.
David, this is a cult. You interviewed for a cult.
As you do. So I ask him about, you know, I'm like, well, how does that work since it's a 6 to 10 week training program? And, you know, they're like, oh, that's what the marketing department does. So I ask, so it's just made up? And they're like, yeah, exactly. It's all your work experience is just made up.
Oh, boy.
It's like, at least it's the one honest marketing department in the world.
I have never had, I've interviewed with several companies, but this is the first one that part of their interview involved them admitting to fraud.
So when do you start?
Right now.
Now they're not the only ones admitting to fraud.
God, yeah, that's crazy, David.
Yeah, what I think it was, honestly, is it sounded like it was kind of a organizations that's predatory on foreign workers, basically.
Oh yeah, okay.
So
yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything that compares to that via stories. Just does wrangling a whole bunch of receipts and categorizing them and making sure everything is squared away in QuickBooks count as a cool story? Because
it
boy,
depends on.
Did you commit
depends
fraud?
On if it also involves fraud?
No, I suppose. No, I really pride myself on keeping good books and being on the level, and also being honest. Yeah. No, it's a. Yeah, this is just today was the day that I decided to bite the bullet and do taxes. So
I've got that TurboTax box staring at me, and it'll have to happen soon here.
Yeah,
I'm kind of feeling like I should commit some fraud though, just to get on the same page as everyone else.
Why is everyone else? I'm not committing fraud. It's very important.
It's okay.
To me.
I know you have to say that on the show, but
it's very important to me that nobody thinks that I'm. Oh. Yeah, but
you can't see it, but I'm winking into the microphone.
I can hear it. It's very upsetting.
Are we just trying to get duck feed audited? Is that is that the game?
Yeah, Cole was extradited to a CIA black site. It's terrible.
And then we reenact black the game.
I forget where was the black talk on air or off air? Oh, it's all running. It's all running together. I would have gone with Area 51 Black Site, the PS2 era, I think, first person shooter.
No, that was a PS3 launch or early cycle title. I
oh
think.
Shit! Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
No one else. I don't think anyone played it.
Also, like Twisted Metal Black.
Yep, Twisted Metal Black, that was launch era PS2. I think that Area 51 game is notable because I think like Trent Reznor or Marilyn Manson provided the voiceover for like the main like gray alien who was your sidekick buddy.
Huh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. How about you, Dennis? Any stories?
Nah, I've been jamming on some games, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty low-key week. I did a business trip last week, that's why I was out of out of recording last week. I did not wind up playing any Vita. I had it packed and just didn't have a chance to play.
Oh yeah? Oh, is the magic gone?
No, that's my travel. Like when I get on a plane, I'm playing a Vita game, right, and I'm closing in, I think, on the end of Danganronpa 2. Mm. And I thought maybe this trip was the one where I would finish it, but I just never got around to it. So yeah. It remains my white whale. Okay. A black and white whale with split personalities.
Of course.
Homicidal maniac.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
To be fair, that's actually basically the white whale.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's. It sounds like we're kind of champing at the bit to get started here. So why don't we get rolling with the show? We got the regular kind of thing for you: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, you have a pretty big one, so I'm going to throw to you first.
Yeah, this was just dropped today, so this is very recent for us. But it was basically something came out with WikiLeaks, where it was basically a data dump about CIA. And it was something that probably a lot of people knew ahead of time, but I guess it's finally the shoe has dropped. But it was basically mentioned that CIA had projects where they have backdoors in Android operating systems, iOS, and Windows. So basically, at any point in time, they can make it appear as if your phone is off, but still have it on and use all the camera and recording functionalities, or same thing with smart TVs and same thing with your computer. So that's a little disheartening and kind of upsetting. So
there are a couple of caveats with this. Okay. The major one is WikiLeaks is by no means a completely, let's say, airtight source for a lot of this stuff. They sometimes selectively leak things or omit certain things, or, you know, in the past sometimes have even tamper with stuff to promote some kind of narrative. So please understand, we're aware of those flaws. If you're listening to this, you're like, wait a minute, why are they talking about a WikiLeaks thing? Additionally, are there any, and I guess this is a question, are there any allegations or claims that this has been deployed, or is this just something that they have the capability of doing?
Wouldn't it have to be deployed to have the capability?
I mean, is this something that they're doing all the time, you know, right now? Like, are they listening through? Well, I mean, people are listening right now. This is getting confusing.
Like, I think the important question is, can we count the CIA sensor listening to this, both as it's recorded and when the download goes out, as extra listenership?
I mean, obviously, yeah.
And we need to include that demographic in our numbers.
Yeah.
Because they call it backdoors, I assume that it's built in with the software.
Right.
But I haven't seen any details confirming that or denying that, though. So that is kind of speculative on my part.
Yeah, and this is also like a malware thing as well. Like, this is like software that is deployed to open it up, as opposed to things that are built in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, ultimately, it's kind of a panopticon thing. You know, as long as they could be watching at any time, they are watching at all times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this WikiLeaks story even just like opens up with, and George Orwell's 1984. Yeah. I saw a couple. I got a couple of news bloops about this today. The big one that seemed to catch the most heat in a headline was the fact that they can open up smart TVs. Like, that is a possible vector for them, which I think is right off the heels of like the revelation that like Vizio is harvesting and selling user viewer information and stuff as well.
I feel like smart TVs are thematically appropriate considering it's straight up 1984, but I feel like in terms of actual, you know, danger or whatever, I mean, I know how serious that is.
Ben, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say the tools that they're talking about are built by a specific group called the Engineering Development Group, and they say that they're responsible for developing, testing, and operational support of all backdoors, exploits, malicious payload intrusions, and viruses, and any malware that CIA uses right now. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, man, you want to talk about the banality of evil. What was that name again?
Engineering Development Group, which it
sounds like a fourth string internal studio at Nintendo.
Look at it this way: like, when a drug lord gets filthy rich, the first thing he's going to do is go out and buy a top of the line smart TV. So they got him.
So one of the one of the things I read about this too was that like the CIA was supposed to disclose like when they were making specific projects that fall into this category, like on a ongoing basis since like 2012 or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was something that they agreed upon previously, so this appears to be breaking that. So another kind of disheartening
also,
thing.
Also, I mean, they're not allowed spying on U.S. citizens, and it doesn't seem like there'd be any way for them not to be with us, right?
Right. I mean, it's like the CIA is specifically a forward. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the CIA is an outward looking organization, whereas the FBI is, you know, kind of internal to the U.S. It doesn't stop any of them from like acting extra judicially. It's not a, you know, no law or safeguard is a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, if true, this is dismaying. I don't know. Like, so in my head, I'm trying to line this up with all of that kind of outrage around the iPhone 5C, I think it was, that was recovered from the San Bernardino shooter. But that was like 2 years ago, where they were trying to get Apple to like build a backdoor into the, you know, like into iOS specifically for that, so they can get around the data vault and that.
You can set precedents to do that whenever. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well,
and the issue was everyone that's anyone within the computer security world basically said, you know, if you do that, there's no way to keep the system secure from criminals.
Right. But then they, you know, it was the FBI, I believe, who immediately turned around and was like, hey, we found some people who could get around it. Bye.
Yeah.
Well, because law enforcement has to tell you the truth if you ask them.
especially if you ask them if they're law enforcement.
So let me clarify an earlier point. The thing that they're breaking is they had promised that they would disclose any vulnerabilities that they found in operating systems of like Apple and Google and things like that. And apparently they have not been doing that. Any vulnerability they have, that they'll just keep to themselves. So
they have not been like white hat in using these powers to, you know, make the things more secure. They have just been kind of, I don't know, water gating the doors with strips of masking tape. Yeah.
And there is like, I took a course in college on, you know, cybersecurity stuff, you know, that sort of thing, cryptography. And there is a really weird relationship because it's usually more the NSA, but, you know, the cybersecurity community does routinely get, you know, advice from the NSA. And there's this really weird relationship where, you know, sometimes they do what they suggest because it appears that they know what they're talking about.
Okay.
And other times it appears that they're trying to, you know, put in weaknesses, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's really weird. Like, I want to say there was at least like one example where basically the NSA suggested, you know, like, oh, you need to, you know, have your encryption do this mathematical thing. And like a significant time later, they, you know, the computer science community, learned that doing that actually did prevent, you know, some sort of obscure hack.
Right.
So,
yeah. So if this is true, it is the biggest revelation about the United States kind of security and surveillance state since Snowden's leak of the NSA record collecting, right? And what this makes it sound like is they are able to access more let's say, just like content from this as opposed to what that was, which was a lot of metadata that was on top of it, you know, in terms of like mining and harvesting. Like this has the potential to be really fucking scary.
Yeah, maybe I'm cynical, but I always kind of assumed that there was something along these lines going on, that, you know, the powerful people could get to the information they wanted in some way. And the question for me has never been like, if it's happening, it's always been just kind of what form it's taking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of hear it and like you said, it's a little dismaying. It's like, okay, well, I lost any ability I had left to maybe pretend or hope that it's not happening, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Sure. Although I feel like the big thing would be, and I don't know enough about the subject to know, is whether this would compromise strong encryption, you know, if someone was, you know, encrypting their hard drive and their traffic and things like that.
I don't know. Like
I did read another article that said that this like breaks apps like Signal and WhatsApp and things like that.
That was going to be my next question, because those are kind of preferred, specifically Signal. Like that's how like White House leaks are getting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so
suddenly a personal unencrypted or whatever email account doesn't seem so bad.
Well, I feel like how do you do the I don't know, mental algebra or whatever now of like conspiracy theories? Because, you know, usually the easy, you know, the safe bet is assume conspiracy theories are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's now been, and let's be honest, have been throughout America's history, like multiple times where conspiracy theories were totally accurate.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why conspiracy theories are almost always kind of ridiculous is because they rely on a large number of people to be able to be competent enough to conceal a secret. And, sure, you know, the more people who are involved, the more complex the thing, the more moving parts there are, the likelier that is to fail, you know. Sure. But, you know, with something like this, where it's not a huge number of people, but instead it's very sophisticated systems that, you know, by nature cannot reveal themselves, and you have the people who are kind of like tending to them. I mean, if this is true, and if what we're looking at is an actual thing, then yes, somebody fucked up and it's out there. But sure. Yeah,
I know. I mean, I feel like the core problem, though, is I don't think anyone believes that people are going to be held accountable for this.
No.
Yeah.
And like that is the shitty thing, because this is a cynical response. You know, well, like this should not be. It's outrageous, but it's like, well, for yeah, fuck yeah, it's I guess.
Yeah, well,
it's the only response.
To get a little bit more political, you know, this does have also larger ramifications, because like as an example, like, hell no, background checks for gun ownership aren't going to be a thing. You know, if, you know, you can no longer make the argument that that's a safe procedure, that the government won't abuse it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it has broader effects than just, you know, this itself.
Yeah.
I want to make one more point of clarification. There are not any, even though the group responsible for developing the malware do backdoors and other things, there's no backdoors currently in the operating system. So they just have malware in order to infect phones.
Okay, so, there we go. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Is that the case for the smart TVs? Because that is, in the articles that I read about that particular side of it, it seemed like those were kind of more compromised.
See, my understanding is that, generally speaking, Internet of Things just isn't secure, period.
No, it just increases the surface area. Yeah. So it sounded like you were going to say something, Ben.
No, yeah, it seems like smart TVs, it says that they just developed an attack against them, so I assume it's something similar to malware.
Okay.
So,
Yeah. Well, there'll be more details that come out. I think that we have a lot of time on this. Unless there are any final words, I'm cool with moving on to the next story.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going once, going twice. Let's talk about rapping dogs. This is a story that I'm actually really shocked that I missed. I guess this happened or was revealed sometime back in November, around some kind of event specifically for Sony. But there's going to be an HD remake of Parappa the Rapper. released digitally on PSN. It's coming out, according to this store page, like this month. It's coming out in March.
Holy shit.
What's going on? This is a game that is impossible to play on modern systems, on modern TVs especially, because of the weird lag problem. You can't really emulate it. It is a wonderful game that, like, I thought was lost to time, and I especially thought was lost to Watch Out for Fireballs. But yeah, no, they're like remaking it in like 40K and like 60 frames, or not 40K, that'd be fucking crazy. No, 4K and 60 frames per second. That like the audio, the soundtrack is going to be CD quality. Beats still my heart. Oh man, yeah. So I was like, I don't know. I saw that. I was like, wait a minute, what? On the PS4, like, even the only change that they're going to make is that the DualShock controller will kind of vibrate like a metronome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. So that you know, it'll make it a little bit easier to keep the beat. Hope you can turn that off, because I, you know, I'm not really a tactile guy when it comes to music. you know, like you do.
So do you think you're gonna cover this then for Watch Out for Fireballs?
If this port is any good, we've been burnt in the past. The PSP port is not good at all. Mm-hmm. But if this port is really good, I could definitely see. I could say it's because we've been on the edge of putting this forward for a very long time, almost for the entire run of the show.
And so, if it's really bad, are you going to do it for Abject Suffering then?
No.
All right.
I mean, because like a bad port of this game just wouldn't be playable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm looking at some of these screenshots. Man, oh man, is like that art style up-resed still looks amazing. Huh. I don't know. Does anybody else
have played I've never played the game, so I...
Nobody else has history with this?
I actually don't.
Sorry.
Oh.
So sorry.
Okay, well...
So maybe this is the excuse, although if my experiences with like Guitar Hero and Rock Band are any indication, this will just result in hours and hours of me fiddling with the lag settings on my TV and sound system.
Maybe.
Like even if it's perfect, I will think it's wrong and need to fiddle.
Yeah. And even if they ship controllers that will do the lag automatically with a weird little flashing light, you're still mm-hmm. going to second guess it.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Unless I get a perfect score on the song, there was lag.
So is this a game that one would be interested in even if they don't like rap? Yeah, I know nothing about it.
The rap is super corny. Like it's really just, you know, like cute hip hop style songs with, you know, lyrics about, you know, baking a cake or, you know, taking driving exams and stuff like that. The opening song is An Onion Who Teaches You Karate. It's super, super cartoonish. Like, I would say, yeah. You know, at the time that I played this as even, like, a little kid, I wasn't that huge into rap music. I think that the soundtrack is unassailable. It's really basic in terms of rhythm gameplay. But, mm-hmm. You know, you're there for the style. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my news. Pigs flew, I guess, or and dogs wrapped. Dennis, what you got for us?
Yeah, this is a little backhanded compliment is the wrong word, but you know, monkey's paw gift from Bungie as they're talking about the next Destiny game. So Destiny 2 is coming out. You know, they're done releasing expansion packs. I think they did 4 for the base Destiny. Which were meaty, you know, increases to the gameplay and everything like that. But they're kind of wiping the slate clean. They're starting fresh and going into a new world with Destiny 2. And the longstanding question has been just how much will carry over. Like, people have invested hundreds, if not thousands of hours into Destiny. What will carry over? And the answer is your character will carry over. But the bad news is that that's about all that carries over. And that's really disappointing because the weapons and the gear, everything that won't transfer, is really your character in that game. Like,
right.
The amount of time you spend looking at your character's face is like less than 1% of the game.
Oh, wait a minute. So when they say your character will export, they just mean your appearance?
Like, not even that, because your appearance is dictated by, like, the gear and weapons that you're using. Because you're wearing your, like, battlefield armor suit.
Yeah, to give you an idea, you don't actually see your character's face in any of the gameplay until a cutscene in, like, the third expansion out of four.
Okie doke.
I think when you're in the hub world, you don't.
Yeah,
have
that's
what
I mean in gameplay. Like, oh, in with gameplay, the exception of when you're just like running around like in town.
I don't even remember seeing my character's face when I was running around in town.
Probably because the camera was behind it.
Right.
But yeah, so this is super disappointing. I mean, I understand why they would have to do it for balance and everything like that. Like, just if you want to have a game with a similar sense of progression, you can't let everyone have, you know, all the progression up front.
It's the Metroid problem.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, I think people get fairly attached to their characters, and you know, they have this light level gear and, you know, the special skin for this and all that. And to have just the avatar, just the character beneath all that transfer over is a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, especially because, I mean, there is some middle ground between, you know, nothing and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other weird restraint on this is to transfer over a character, you have to have played through what's the name of it? It's the final mission, I think, of the game. Of the base game, not the expansions, okay. But the Black Garden, it's called. So you have to have reached level 20, and which was originally in the game the level cap. They since upped it to 40, but reach the original level cap. Finish the original final mission, and then you can carry the character over. But since there's so little carrying over that's not cosmetic, I don't know why that restriction would be there, unless it was purely like a database thing. Like, they can't afford to keep, you know, data points or keep you know, the files for every single one of these characters around. So you can't, you know, they're only going to make the ones that have reached a certain stage importable. But even then, like, that begs the question. So is the original Destiny just going to go away? Like, that feels like a really weird arbitrary restriction, especially given that they're not having important stuff transfer over.
When was it the Taken King expansion? Like, straight up, for most players, doesn't make sense because it relies on your character having done things that most characters haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I bought, or I didn't buy, when I got the PS4 from you, David, I had the, you know, the full expansion version of the game, where it was the game and the first three DLCs, and they made no freaking sense.
Yeah, well, because, kind of the long story short is, it's basically a guy, like, the whole plot of the third expansion is someone seeking revenge on you for killing someone that the vast majority of players never got ran that raid. Like, yeah. It straight up doesn't make sense. It's like, so why? Yeah, I don't know. This is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's making the case for why kind of a clean slate Destiny 2 is needed, right? Because the DLCs on top of DLCs are just getting untenable. But you think they would do something, like, even just cosmetically, to let something carry over. I don't know.
Yeah, just, like, keep the same appearance, but then, like, your armor doesn't do anything, you know?
Yeah.
Base level.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do know there has been some talk that the... this version of Destiny or whatever was significantly compromised by the need for backwards compatibility. So I feel like there's for a long time been kind of the feeling that they probably were going to wipe the slate once they could kind of move on from the past generation. So I feel like that aspect isn't surprising.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder if they're actually going to do some kind of like bonus. It's not going to be enough, right? Because it's not going to reflect all of the time that somebody has put into it. You know, they're not going to be able to keep their Escutcheon flash.
What's the rocket launcher?
I don't know.
The Gjallarhorn?
Yeah, they're not going to be able to keep their Gjallarhorn. Like, it's never going to be enough, right? Because nothing is.
Have we ever talked about how like jacked up the situation with Gjallarhorn is?
I feel like it was brought up.
Okay.
Back around the time of the launch. No, but I mean, so there, it's never going to be enough in that regard. But like, if there was some kind of like leveling bonus, or if there was like a special piece of like visual swag that you could get, you know, to decorate your character with. Obviously, that's very minor, but it, you know, would be something.
Here's, I think what they could do is like for the intro mission, even if it's just the first part of it or whatever, it's different for people who had Destiny the first.
Yeah.
Who kind of rolled in, and then there's people who recognize you or whatever. And as long as they do that for just like the tutorial area, and the people who kind of come to it fresh get a different experience, I think that could be interesting. Hmm. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, how about you? You got a story?
Sure. So basically, it's come out that Twitch is going to start selling games. So they're going to have a system where when you're watching someone stream a game, you can then buy it, presumably on Amazon.
Yeah. And then the streamer gets a cut, like an affiliate kind of thing.
Right. The streamer gets a cut, and the game developer gets a cut. The other, some of the other weird things for it is apparently for some of the games, at least, and it sounds like mostly freemium games, you're going to, using this, be able to get, like, in-game, I have no idea what you get in League of Legends.
Skins.
League of Legend hats?
Yeah, yeah, why not? Wards, yeah. Wards, ward skins. Ward yes. skins, yes.
And then, apparently also, whenever you buy something, you will get a Twitch crate, which contains exclusive emotes and things like that for Twitch.
Hmm.
So,
yeah. Is Twitch itself going the free-to-play route?
I mean, it kind of has been a little bit. Yeah.
Kind of is.
Yeah. Just in terms of, you know, getting special, it's more on like the channel side, but like either getting, different avatar swag or different emotes and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I did. I got the Hearthstone character that you could only get by signing up through Twitch. Mm. Yep. It was the Tyranda, Whisperwind, or whoever. Yeah. Someone from World of Warcraft knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is a... Kind of like we said, nothing happened this week. This is a news story that's like fairly relevant, but also fairly like, okay.
Yeah, it's like it's not very different than what was happening. It's like it's building it into the platform itself. You know, obviously, yeah. Like streams sell games. That is something that Nintendo would learn something would do well to learn. I think.
yeah, they so just rely like on all the Reddit memes.
I guess. But
yeah, so I feel like that's one thing that is newsworthy about this is that maybe it would kind of silence some of that criticism, although I feel like it's mostly already silenced.
Is it a criticism that streams sell stuff? I think it's a feature,
I mean,
not a bug.
People who are anti streams, like what's his name, yeah. The fish guy.
I don't
Made Fez or whatever.
Oh, Phil Fish. Yeah. Yeah. Possibly. I don't know. This just makes it easier to do what was already happening. You know, I've in designing our Switch, Twitch page, guys, I thought I had a line on a Nintendo Switch earlier, but it fell through and I am very upset.
No.
Yeah.
So did you not pre-order or what happened?
No, I didn't pre-order.
Okay.
Just wait like 2 weeks. We never play games that are new anyway.
I suppose, yeah. it showed as available at Amazon. Like a lot of Twitch streamers actually have kind of like we have Amazon affiliate links at the bottom. Like, hey, if you're going to buy this, buy it through that right there, and then this just cuts out that middleman.
See,
and
I wonder
builds it into their compensation.
I wonder if this is related, like a week or two ago, Amazon pretty significantly slashed how much they pay affiliates.
I haven't seen that, or I didn't get an alert on it.
Yeah, I know. I news story came across Hacker News, but apparently they I don't know. Yeah. They did that thing.
Yeah, I could see it. I'll need to go in and take a look and compare. But
it's interesting to me. You mentioned that game developers get a cut, and I assume that means like a cut additional to what they would normally get from selling a game through anyone. Which I wonder if that could influence people to consider Twitch even more so than they're starting to already do when building their games, and that developers would specifically add in functionality with Twitch, like the Tomb Raider game did, or other stuff like that, in the hopes that, hey, I can get a higher percentage on each sale if I make this, really, really centric on buying through Twitch.
Yeah. I can't imagine that the developers or publishers would get an extra, would get more than they would usually get for a sale. Like it really like it seems like it would be a straightforward affiliate thing where just the retailer uses the commission as it's like a finder's fee almost.
I'll be honest. Yeah, most of the stories I've been able to find on this just barely make sense through all the marketing speak.
Yeah,
and so no, and like literally most of them will just be like talking about a thing, and then all of a sudden, and Hi-Rez co-founder says this is great. It's like what? Yeah. That's not even. We weren't even talking about that.
That's all that I have. I don't know if I have anything more on that.
feels like a grind to me. A brief to me.
Yeah.
Brief grind.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you, the nice people, answer it. Let's see, Dennis, you put the question up. What did we ask the nice people?
I did. I was feeling social today, so I asked about what your favorite games are to play with friends, both online and on the couch, and also if there are any games that you have only ever played with friends.
To be fair, I think my favorite game to play with friends on the couch is probably Pillow Fort.
That's playing games with the couch.
Okay.
I'll get us started here. Roop writes in saying, Jackbox. Games are always... that dash was very misleading, Roop. Jackbox games are always a hit with people who have never used their smartphones as a controller. Online, I tend to play Counter-Strike Go or NHL. To me, best local co-op games are board games. Elder Sign, Mantis of Madness, Pandemic, etc. Yeah, Jackbox, I think, is right up the center for this, of like social kind of games. I could not imagine playing this with randos. In fact, whenever randos have broken into a Quiplash game, it has been the fucking worst.
Oh,
yeah. I feel like that. Yeah, that's one that just inherently would not work with random people.
Yeah. These were also randos who were intent on going around to Twitch games of Jackbox and then just kind of like putting unfunny trollish shit in there.
It's amazing how prevalent that is, because I know I've had that happen to me at least once. It's like, who is spending their night? You're so lonely.
Teenagers.
Well, yeah, that's fair. Answer to most problems.
Yeah, we were talking off mic about just about the crazy, weird, like just we're in like the shitty sci-fi dystopia that we're in, or cyberpunk dystopia that we're in.
We
good.
We basically did a monkey's paw where we managed to land right in the middle of 1984 in A Brave New World and just got the worst of both.
Yep. But I mean, there are kids who are running around like marauding groups of like Clockwork Orange teenagers whose sole purpose is to find people playing Pictionary and fuck their life up. Like if you wrote that 15 years ago, it wouldn't have made any sense.
And even worse, they don't know any of the literary references we just made.
Teens. Ben, what does Stuart say?
Stuart says, I've only played Gears of War co-op. I can't imagine how boring all that trundling, squatting, and shooting would have been alone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Whole class of games. More fun with people.
I've got to give props for using trundling. That is an underused word.
Mm-hmm.
A very evocative verb. Yeah. David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, Tuesday night is games night for my friends and I. We just finished Gauntlet. We rotate regularly, but the one game we come back to is Ticket to Ride Online. It's much easier to talk without using prompts from the events in the game to drive the conversation. Payday 2 gets a mention as we almost played that for a year.
Yeah, and also a round of Payday 2 is happening in the background of one of your houses.
My bad.
No, that's a...
I live in the Tenderloin. That's basically how it rolls.
Yep. No, I'm not giving you shit. Because there's enough of it on the sidewalks.
I had a dude walking down the street earlier today who just like passes some random person and yells at them, I ain't got time to talk. I'm doing criminal shit.
Oh, cool.
I feel like I need that on a shirt.
That sounds like a line out of Payday 2.
It really does. Yeah, Ticket to Ride. I imagine being on Skype while you play that is probably necessary, but that is just like low investment enough to be a prompt for or to be a good conversation game. It sounds like.
I just played my first games of Ticket to Ride this year.
Oh yeah.
And man, yeah, I am ambitious with my tickets. Say that much.
Were you playing them electronically or were you playing them physical copy?
Board game.
Yeah.
Good shit.
I like the electronic version because the scoring happens automatically.
Yeah. No matter how meticulous you are about keeping your score while you're playing on the board game version, you always go back through at the end and just add it up on your own. I don't know why you bother moving the marker during the game.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Tim say?
Tim says, growing up, there was loads of party games. Mario Kart 64, hell yeah. Smash Bros, hell yeah, Melee. Or hell yeah, Melee. Mario Kart 64, Smash Bros. Melee, Gauntlet Legends, etc. But the best co-op from my childhood was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, The Manhattan Project. It was pretty much the only time my brother and I played a game together without friends over. The real challenge was making sure we chose the right mode of play where we couldn't hurt each other, especially since we'd exploit the super moves.
Yeah. Having done the Brawler special for Watch Out for Fireballs, I could not imagine playing one of those games by myself anymore. That was kind of a slog. Like D&D is a little bit, you know, it's not terrible. Like that Brawler, the Shadow of Mystara. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That is a game that would only be played with people now.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was a friendly fire mode.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, like in the Manhattan Project, I need to check because I always get that and Hyperstone Heist mixed up.
Yeah.
How weird that Konami just had that cottage industry for a while. Yeah. Michael writes, it's not a video game, but a game of sorts. Magic the Gathering was a huge part of my social scene during college.
It's infecting the podcast. Sorry.
Me and some buddies spent many all-nighters playing pickup games, drinking beers, and trading cards. We worked as a community to cobble together the weirdest types of decks we could think of. Many laughs were had along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
That is one thing that Hearthstone is sorely missing, is any kind of social interaction. Like, it's a trading card game, but you can't trade cards.
Right, you can't go to an event.
Yeah, well, you can, but that's really not a very well organized scene.
Right.
And any kind of, you know, friend list is the most basic possible thing in the world. So, definitely Magic the Gathering has a communal edge when it comes to card games.
Yeah. Even like when I say events, something like a draft night like Ben is doing, you know, where it's not so much about having the best possible deck, but building one out of what you get, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is good because it depowers investment.
Which, by the way, I've seen online, they do like stream video of large Magic the Gathering tournaments. So Magic the Gathering even has that going for it with Hearthstone, the streaming community can get on board.
Yeah. Ben, what does David say?
David says Terraria. Technically, both ways, though. The couch co-op is playing at the same desk on PCs with my wife, since mouse and keyboard is the best for that game. I can't imagine playing it by myself.
Oh, I could see that being pretty fun, playing with somebody else and like making decisions about like base design and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, since it's with his wife, he can even argue about which wall to put the painting on and all that stuff.
Hey, cool, Ray Romano. The eye is coming. Deborah. Yeah. I'm running into that with I'm not running into that. I'm not arguing with somebody about wall stuff, but we'll talk about it in the grind. But Dragon Quest Builders is getting interesting.
I was really hoping that you and Gary were going to become like a sitcom couple.
That was a short-lived storyline on Monster in My Podcast, but we were developing a story about starting a family with homunculuses. Yes. Yeah. David, what does Chris say?
Chris says, with my partner, chill out games like Pixel Junk Monsters and hopefully Stardew Valley when it comes out. With my buddies, it's whatever the flavor of the week is. Though it's usually been real-time strategy comp stomps. Back in the day, we did get really into Risk of Rain, which was really fun to try and speedrun together.
Risk of Rain has a really sharp difficulty curve, and so I could see it being the kind of game that rewards like party comp and team coordination and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been able to get into it. It seems really cool though.
Yeah. It was a little bit too fast for me. But that more speaks to my own limitations. Yeah. I'm really curious about how multiplayer on Stardew Valley is going to work.
Yeah.
You know what? I really want to see someone, where they call it deep network or whatever, like AI program, like Stardew Valley or Harvest Moon or something.
Just do deep learning on Harvest Moon algorithms.
How to maximize relaxation.
There's so little that is random specifically about like even the earlier Harvest Moon. Like you could probably do like a very simple algorithm that would maximize your play in Harvest Moon specifically because again nothing moves and all of the like resources that you go to the mountain to get are in the same place most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah,
that feels like a case study in losing by winning.
Yep. What have we done? It was my kid's birthday.
So efficient.
I was thinking the other day, I wonder if you ever started using deep learning to train like actual AI that you play against, I wonder if you could like have it deep learn to like on normal mode make sure you win approximately 50% of the time.
I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting.
But learning to win 50% of the time wouldn't actually be that good because that isn't good balance to win 50%. No, you always want people to win a little bit more than half the time. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Also, you get into weird situations where it like clearly had the upper hand, but because its percentage was slightly over 50% through the game.
Yeah, tanks it.
Well, see, I'm not so much thinking that it would change its behavior in any given game, but in terms of like developing the strategies it uses, could you train it to not use certain strategies were too successful?
I don't know.
This is very speculative and off topic, but yeah, you could probably make like classes of like neural nets that are different levels of competency at a game and then just sub them out so that it's like a 50% win rate.
Like right? The different bot profiles in Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
I really miss that game.
You can still play it. I think it's on 360. Dennis, what does Cameron say?
Cameron says, "This is an aspect of gaming that I miss most from my early years as a gamer. Some of the most fun I've ever had was sitting on my friend's couch for hours after school playing Mario Party or GoldenEye." Oh, both great games. "Those games were so much fun, I still break out my N64 from time to time when I have company. It was always an easy way to come out of my shell and enjoy something with friends. The last game to give me that sort of experience was Far Cry 4. Oh, interesting. My friend and I spend hours playing co-op, clearing settlement after settlement, then starting all over. Since then, we've lost touch. Maybe it's time I fire it up again and give him a call."
Go for
it. That wasn't a couch co-op game, right? Far Cry 4?
I never played it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
There's no way that they got something to run well enough on two screens.
Right.
Or on split screen. Although, I say that, but then Uncharted 3, which was probably pushing the PS3 about as far as it could go, mm-hmm. had split screen.
Weird.
Yeah. So maybe I could see it.
But Far Cry 4 was PS4.
Right. I'm just thinking, Far Cry 4 was a step change in terms of visuals and everything
like
that.
Yeah. He could also be talking about playing online co-op. Like, that's, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. Those could be different thoughts.
That was notably one of the games where your friend didn't have to own the game to be able to jump in and co-op it, right?
You could do share play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At least for a limited time. I've never actually used share play, so I don't know if that's how it works.
Weirdly enough, that's one of the features that I haven't used.
Yeah. I'll pick up here with Gwillem, who writes, "I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Gwillem. Awesome Nonce is utterly glorious and marked the first time that I'd ever understood MOBAs as a genre, partly because it's a 2D platformer, which makes it all that easier to process visually, and partly because its controls weren't designed for a completely different game." I think we're referring to MOBAs being RTSs in disguise. "Most importantly, everything is pared down and simplified. The steep learning curve is gone, and instead, everything is intuitive and immediate, with strikingly gorgeous cartoon graphics and one of the best soundtracks of the past decade. Plus, the loading screens are used as a fan art showcase, which is such a lovely thing to do. How can you not love that? The whole thing is one big hug." And this is a long response, but I think that gives us enough to work with.
Holy shit. Why, now that I've heard that, why doesn't every single game ever use fan art for loading screens?
Maybe like licensing stuff. Maybe bigger companies are afraid to use, are afraid to endorse even the existence of fan art.
Yeah. That's so cool though. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic, especially if it's being vetted. Like if they're, hopefully they're not just going to DeviantArt and like pulling down character X the hedgehog.
God, oh.
Yeah. it is a good idea. I miss the Awesome Nauts train. I never played it when it was popular. I think it was just one of those. It was so weird, like the summer of arcade stuff that would happen. It's like, hey, every week during August, we're going to put out an amazing game that would be the headliner of its own month. And then you just end up having to choose. So I think Awesome Nauts was just one of those ones that passed me by.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ben, what does James say?
James says, "Super Smash Brothers on the N64 at university. I'm that old. So many hours put into that game, and I doubt we could get anywhere in a tournament."
Well, that says more about the tournaments than you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No destination, no items.
I think that's still a sore point.
That's also not on the N64 one, I believe, right?
No, I think that is a Melee thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, at the point where you straight up make your own version of the game in order to do your thing, that's when maybe you're taking it a little too small.
But then Nintendo embraced it with their different multiplayer tiers for the most recent one. It's a give and take.
Yeah.
I'm trying my hardest to be magnanimous about this because in the past I think it's to a point of an in joke where I'm so dismissive of that. let's see. David, what does Nathan say?
Sure, Nathan says, when my friends got a Wii U at the tail end of college, they had some sort of game where you play as a bird trying to get a thing from another bird. We only played it after 2 a.m. when we were completely smashed, and it was a rip-roaring good time. No idea what the name of the game was, but we called it Bird Fight.
I have no idea either.
Like, this is going to bother me if I don't find out what this is.
I find the best thing to do in this is simply to copy and paste the description into Google. So
yeah, chasing
game
Aurora.
Where you play as a bird trying to get a thing from another bird.
I put in Wii U Bird Fight.
I think it's called the same.
It's called Chasing Aurora, but I'm not sure when that was released. It looks like a very pretty game. Mm-hmm. A pretty game about pretty birds. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Who knows? But I do like, these vague descriptions. Dennis, what does Chris say?
Chris says, haven't done much in recent times, but back in the day, those early Burnout games and the Warriors was a blast. Huh. Though I remember seeing that the Warriors was being turned into a video game and then hearing nothing about it after it launched.
It's good.
It's good. Yeah.
Huh.
To be fair, I feel like it would be entirely inappropriate if the Warriors didn't end up as a cult video game.
Well, because I think it came out really late on the console's life, right?
It's like 2005, I think.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
That's late enough.
And then, because I remember playing this, one of my friends, like, this sounds like lame, he like hacked an Xbox or whatever, but he just basically made it so it had a bunch of different games on it. And so we ended up playing like the Warriors and playing Doom 3, I think, and some other games. But yeah, the Warriors was awesome.
Yeah. No, it was a Rockstar game. It was like a 3D beat 'em up.
And I remember the controls like were very close to like what you were doing in the game. Like mm-hmm. you had to spin the joysticks around to unscrew a car radio before you tore it out.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Yeah, like little gestural stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then early Burnout, like that's unassailable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'll round us out here with our last one. We got through them all, guys. Greg writes, it's a cop-out answer, but MMORPGs are best done with friends, even though there's a lot you can do with them just by playing solo. It's the only way that I'll do that I'll do one these days. I also enjoy playing Axis and Allies, Atari Vault games on Steam, and Madden against friends. The only games the only game that I'll play with friends and never solo is the classic multiplayer game Mule.
I really want a Madden branded version of like Cards Against Humanity that's just Madden against friends.
Wait, Madden against the cast of Friends?
Sure. Let's go for it.
Sean Madden against six people.
No. I was thinking like a full football team. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, all of those are good. I feel like our answers are going to probably run up against those. And I'll give the cop out sentimental answer. Some of the best times that I've had playing games with people was when we were in the dorms and we were playing like Shadow of the Colossus or Resident Evil 4 or Silent Hill 2. Just kind of passing the controller back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember specifically getting Silent Hill 2 from you with specific instructions to play it in the dark.
Oh yeah.
Like, this will be better if you play it like in the at night with the lights out.
Yeah.
Trust me. And you're right.
I'll throw another warm, fuzzy answer out there. I'd say playing Rock Band at your house, Cole.
Oh, yeah.
And also making you drink a Smirnoff Ice while doing it. It's a very fond memory.
There's another show. It might be on Monster on My Podcast where icing comes up. When you when weird fad social pressures in late 2010 made me drink a 22-ounce Smirnoff Ice. That still might be the sickest I've ever been. I told you I had to go into work hungover the next day, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was on the air like, welcome to the radio reading service for Greater Cincinnati. Okay, we're good. And then music on, cut to the people in the studio, and then running around to the other side of the floor so I could throw up.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, still, this is still some of the sickest I've ever been, so thanks, dude.
Very cool. Oh, man.
But yeah, Rock Band with you guys was fun times.
You were stupid in college.
Oh, yeah. This was after college. We'd all graduated, I think.
Really? For Rock Band? 2010 we were still in college. Yeah.
Oh, you guys did. You had co-ops, so I was graduated and just kind of bumming around, and you guys were
had to be just barely. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Cool. For me, it's Rayman Origins and Rayman Legends.
Yeah.
Like those two games are just fantastic couch co-op. And I believe we platinumed Rayman Legends.
Holy shit!
Yeah, together. So and without ever once like picking up the controller to play separately.
That's great.
Good times.
So we can tell that the only guy that doesn't mention a game from college is also the only one who's married.
Oh, you guys played a ton of games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In college as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah.
David, how about you?
This isn't really my thing, but Army of Two is only valid to play couch co-op. I don't know, I'd have to go with either college Halo 2 or before that Halo 1 at 101 in high school.
Halo 101, when we all got out of school early for some reason and we came back to my house and played in the basement. I think I was like it was like post-secondary, like I was heading to college classes on some days, and then the other days it's like, well, it's 2 o'clock and I'm home, let's play Halo.
Nice. Wait, did you do post-secondary too, David?
I did some, but also just our school, because again, America is a dystopia. I ran out of classes to take.
Yeah,
that's funny. No, I did post-secondary too, and it was primo, like, you know, college schedule, senior year of high school, and totally just randomly, like, and it, I did it the full time, I think the last quarter or trimester or whatever, my senior year.
Full time, geez.
Yeah, and, but I mean, like, didn't have any high school classes left.
Right.
So not quite the same situation as David, but didn't need to take any. And seriously, I'd you know, get done at like 2, like you said, and be at home and be like, I've got track practice coming up. Really don't feel like going to track practice. Yeah,
what was your event
in
track?
What's that?
What was your event in track?
Oh, I was a shot putter and a discus thrower.
Yeah, nice.
Discus wheeler. Whatever the right verb for that is.
Yeah. For people who don't know what we're talking about, post-secondary, at least in Ohio, I think other classes or other states might do the same thing, is when you get out of high school to go take college classes. But because college classes don't happen every day, oftentimes it results in a lot of free time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Playing Halo.
Yep. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast to watch for those to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to both Dennis and Jala for putting those up. And I think we're also operating off of a list of suggestions as well. So thanks to people who have suggested.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. Dennis, since you have been gone the longest, I'm going to throw to you first.
Yeah, and I'm not going to bury the lead. I have been playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this. I had no interest until I heard them talk about it on the Besties, and then it made it sound incredibly good. I want to hear the skinny, man.
Yeah, incredibly good is like the least that you can say about this game. Like, there is so much to like here. So, kind of like open world, Tomb Raider-esque slash like, Fallout 4-esque slash, you know, that kind of RPG. although it shares a lot of DNA with Tomb Raider, set in the future past. So far, you know, past the apocalypse, it is a post apocalypse game. I think
that's the way they're marketing it anyway.
Yes, so it's the apocalypse has happened. Everything has kind of come back, and society is rebuilding on top of that. The apocalypse somehow left sentient machines, so that wildlife just kind of has, like, there aren't any horses left in the world. They're all robo horses. And in my last play session, I discovered the Robo Moose. So that was pretty cool.
So this has been bothering me. The characters are clearly wearing leather clothing. Where do they get leather?
I mean, they're humans.
Yeah, right. It's long pig leather. It is. There are animals as well. So there's still boars and turkeys and rabbits and everything roaming around. So there's kind of this mix of wildlife and mecha life and then human life. And everything has kind of advanced, at least as far as I am in the game. You're kind of to the nomadic tribal stage where there's cities are starting to be put down, but you know, there's still a lot of the tribe that you come from puts a lot of veneration in they call it All Mother, but it's like nature. And kind of shuns the machinery as corrupted or, you know, impure.
These are like, so demons.
Playing as,
yeah.
So you're basically playing as the people who really ended the paleo diet.
Yeah. Yeah. Playing as the Amish. Only these people are way cooler than the Amish. So, you know.
Ouch. Sorry to our Amish listeners.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It is possible. So that's kind of the world. It's a brilliant new IP. Like this doesn't feel like it is a ripoff of anything that I've seen before. It kind of has its own fresh take, especially, and this is one of the things I like most about the game. Every time I feel like I've got my feet under me and I really have started to grok or understand the way this world works, it gets expanded on me. And, you know, it's kind of, you learn something about the way the world works or potentially what happened in the apocalypse or just what other tribes and cultures within this new world, how they operate, that kind of puts a new twist on things and just makes the world that you play in, not the physical space, but just the kind of story that you're living in feel incredibly big and expansive. I've put probably close to 10 hours into the game since it's launched. So it's a fair chunk of time. And I know I've seen allusions to other cultures and other systems and everything like that. And one of my main kind of through line quests is to go find one of these other cultures. But I've really only experienced the culture of my own tribe to this point, okay. Which is again, really, really cool. Like it doesn't feel limiting. It feels like I've been in a vast world and exploring some really interesting stories. But yet there are these tidbits of other stuff that's even out there that's even bigger and more foreign, and that really keeps me driving forward. So in terms of, you know, succeeding with a new IP, I think they've done it in spades.
Nice.
Gameplay wise, I think the reason this game is so unique and so good is it's the first time where I felt like I've really, really put thought into setting ambushes.
Okay.
So the Tomb Raider Lara Croft description is apt, where, you know, you're ultimately a badass girl with a bow, which, by the way, how cool is it that there's just another strong female protagonist at the head of this, yeah. And they pull that off without at any point feeling pandering or anything like that. It's just very natural. But, you know, badass girl with a bow, and you've got some traps and stuff at your disposal. But truly to succeed in the game, whereas in Tomb Raider, you kind of got in situations and you tried to stay stealthy, like take people out without getting seen. But it felt like there was always kind of a direction the game wanted you to approach things from. In Horizon Zero Dawn, it really feels like a sandbox, and you can kind of decide which angle to come at things from. Like it's very, very open. And there's a way to, when you kind of scan an enemy, you can see their track, like where they've been walking.
Okay.
And that allows you to set traps along that path. And so I've literally, as I'm infiltrating a base, kind of said, okay, he's walking over there, so I'm just going to drop this here and then scurry off to the other side. I'm going to focus on taking this guy out from afar with an arrow. I heard the explosion over there where I laid my trap. That means everyone's going to run that way. So that means I can get through to the back. And there's this element of like planning and having everything come together in your head in advance of actually doing it that I haven't seen in other games.
Hmm.
So it's the best ambush game that I've seen. It's not a stealth game, Although there are elements of stealth, it's really an ambush game.
It's like it's way too wide open for that, for it to be like truly like line of sight stealth kind of stuff.
Exactly. And I know an axiom of the network is a stealth game succeeds or fails based on how much fun it is when you get caught.
Right.
And this is very much a game where it's fun when you get caught. I one of the recent fights that I had, my stealth completely went out the window. I screwed up bad. It was just honestly just making a mad dash to get away from these two really powerful machines that knew exactly where I was. And I had a trap in my inventory that was like you shot it to activate it. So it was an explosive trap, but then you shot it with an arrow to decide when to set it up. So I'm running full tilt away from these guys, just drop that on the ground. And then, you know, I'm like 3, 2, 1 sprinting in the wrong direction, and then just stop, turn around and loose an arrow. And because I leaned back from the microphone to pantomime firing an arrow. That's why I went quiet there, but stop, turn around, loose an arrow into the trap and explode it right as the two enemies chasing me come over it. And there was like, I was just dashing off in a random direction. There was nothing designed about that. It just came together perfectly. So you really feel empowered to be kind of, an improviser and in the combat as well.
Yeah.
Probably where the game shines the most is in the hunting aspect. So okay. Again, then the machines act like wildlife. There's regular wildlife in the game. And there are several missions where you are tasked with basically hunting the machines. And if this is what like Cabela's Big Game Hunter is like, I need to go find that series because I'm missing something. it's so much fun. It plays into that whole ambush thing where you kind of prowl around, set your traps in advance. But then you're deciding, like, I'm going to try to scare these machines down this ravine where I've set a bunch of traps because I know that'll take them out. Or one recent mission, there was a really powerful machine in this area prowling around, but I needed to hunt boars in the area. And so it was a matter of, like, I was being hunted at the same time I was hunting. It was, like, sneaking around in the underbrush, had to kind of make sure I knew where the machine was, take my shot on the boar, go out, get its pelt, get back into cover before it came back around to find me. And that was just a really like tense situation that was a lot of fun to go through and felt very unique to anything else I've played.
Huh. You're making it very hard for me not to get this. If I didn't already have so much like stacked up, like I know I wouldn't be able to engage with it. I think earlier when I was like looking more into it, it's like, yeah, I'm going to probably get this when it's like at $40 maybe, be pretty soon. But is that, I mean, like that isn't like a value thing. That's just more me setting an arbitrary line so that I do not add it, so that I remove it from my Amazon cart.
Well, let me talk you down. Then I'll talk about the very few things that I do have a problem with. So overall, the animation in this game is great. Like your motion through the world, and you know other characters' motion in gameplay.
I hear the enemy animation is baller as fuck, right? Because like they have all of these different parts moving. You can see the gears beneath the what passes for their skin and stuff. Like it just seems. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's incredibly intricate and detailed on that level.
Right. And then they do a cutscene.
Uh-oh.
And the facial animation in this game, like the motion capture software they must have used to capture people's performances, just did not cut it. And it's not 100% of the time. There are certain characters where I don't know if it's just like their faces was easier for the software to pick up or the actors knew how to work with the rigs or what. Certain characters it works fine with. The majority of characters, it looks completely stilted and half captured and just off. And it's almost as if like they had done all this capture and all the performances, assuming that the software was going to be good enough. And then at the last second, someone thought to actually watch it and it did not look good. And they didn't have time to like fix it before they shipped or something like that. Like that's the story I've inventing for myself.
Okay.
And the big problem is that Aloy, the main character, is one of the characters where it doesn't work.
Oh, weird.
Just unfortunate. So she's in every single cutscene and every single, you know, dialogue tree. And it's just hard to watch her. The closest I can get is I think it has something to do with how much a person moves their jaw when they talk.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's it or not, but like for some reason that the character
like a ventriloquist doll or a nutcracker maybe.
No, it's the opposite problem. The jaw is not moving at all. It's like,
so it's a ventriloquist.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just painful to watch. So the story is interesting, compelling, but it's kind of the broader sweep of it, not the individual cutscenes. I'd almost rather like close my eyes and listen to the voice acting, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the voice acting, at least.
Yeah, although the main character mumbles everything.
Mm.
Like vaguely confused and mumbling is like, and I get she's supposed to be like this introverted type or whatever, but it's just it's and I think that conflicts with whatever they were using to capture the animations as well.
That's the first I've ever heard somebody say something bad about the visuals of the game.
And not the visuals, the animation.
The presentation, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just struck me as hard to watch. And again, if I compared it to like Mass Effect 2 or 3, right? It's probably on par with that. Like it's probably in line with that. But everything is so much more gorgeous that I expect more. And at least in Mass Effect 2, there were a bunch of aliens where if it looked stilted, I could pass it off on it was because it was an alien versus the animation was bad.
Yeah.
The other thing is that mounts in the game are stupid as fuck, man.
Okay.
And it's really elegant when you're not trying to ride them. Like the machine AI, like there's a layer of that, like because it's machines that you're fighting, it feels a little bit more natural if you like confuse them or like there's a glitch in the AI, like that's diegetically explained. Mm-hmm. However, when you get on it to ride your mount, like it is just horrible. It constantly thinks it needs to jump over things that it doesn't need to jump over. It will constantly just slow down and stop if you're not riding the X button. So whereas like Shadow of the Colossus is a case study in how to do riding a horse well.
Okay.
Horizon Zero Dawn feels a little bit like a case study in how not to do it. And as long as you're sticking to a main path, it's passable. But the problem is you're kind of diving off into the underbrush frequently enough that becomes a real problem when it gets confused about how to go around a rock. Mm. Like should not, or like the last time I was playing, I got stuck because the horse decided it would jump partway down like a steep grade and then got stuck halfway on the grade. And would not jump back up and would not jump the rest of the way back down.
Oh, wow.
And so like stuck halfway up a hill I'm like, literally I could fall to where I want to be, just go. And so I'm like trying to coax it and find like the place in the geometry where it will go. So that's unfortunate. That said, those are two ultimately very, very small nitpicks on a game that I'm really, really enjoying. Yeah. It gets a ton of little things right. Just small touches that I notice as good. Like, for example, if you're sprinting, there's a gathering component to the game, like in Tomb Raider or The Last of Us, where you're just constantly scavenging for supplies.
Okay.
And if you're sprinting through the world and pass something that's gatherable and hit the button to pick it up, you'll stop, you'll gather it, but then you'll take off again at a sprint without needing to hit another button.
Nice.
Which is just a real quality of life thing, knowing that players are going to be getting from point A to point B. Hey, I want to pick up this medicinal herb, but I really like... really, really my objective is to get over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make that as seamless as possible. There's also just a bunch of little touches with your controller speaker making noises, particularly when you focus on certain things that I found to be a really nice touch. I don't think it's getting into spoiler territory to talk about like you kind of find a piece of technology early on. And when you first interact with it, the sound for it comes out of your controller instead of the TV.
Oh yeah.
Which gave me like a jump, like the character was experiencing in the game of like, oh, that's weird. Like what the, like, and that it was just this really, creative way to pass on that feeling, that your character was having.
Yeah. Is the inclination to call that a gimmick is so strong, even though that's been around for more than 10 years, like they were doing that on the Wii. And I think that it worked very well with that. Like, I think that controller speakers are a good idea, and I like when they're used.
It's a quality of life touch.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a little nice thing that they're not building any systems on the game on it. It's just a creative, you know, nice little touch.
Yeah.
So that's, I've spilled a lot of words, but I don't know if you guys have questions about it or anything like that.
Ben, this sounds like it's really up your alley. I want to throw to you first to see if you have
AAA
any...
with gathering. I don't know. Is the narrative good? I mean,
it is. I think I've revealed maybe about 15 to 20% of the world map.
Okay.
And Again, I feel like story-wise, I'm still fairly early on.
Mm-hmm.
So take it with that grain of salt. But what I've experienced so far is compelling.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this makes me definitely more inclined to get it than before. I think before I kind of dismissed it as just kind of an open world sandbox game that, like, same thing as, like, sort of like Far Cry. So,
yeah, that's the game I was fishing for, not Fallout, Far Cry. Mm, I think okay. It definitely shares a lot of DNA with Far Cry.
Yeah. I definitely do feel like I've gotten burned out on that type of genre of game after playing, like, all the different Far Cries. Like, they definitely run together, but it sounds like this one might be a little bit more creative in terms of the art style. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. One thing is I started playing on hard, not normal. Mm-hmm. So, like, one step up in difficulty, like I do. And it's definitely lent the encounters with machines a heavier weight than I think you might get into in normal mode, which I really enjoy. Like, if I have to take on more than two machines at a time, that gives me serious pause. And I have to stop and be like, okay, do I really want to do this? How do I do this? Let's watch their paths and see when they're isolated. And, like, versus I think if I played in normal mode, I could probably just kind of go in guns or arrows blazing. Mm-hmm. What's guns blazing for arrows? Arrow knocked, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. But I think for anyone who's going to pick this up, start in hard difficulty. I have not had cheap or arbitrary deaths where I felt like it was just a numbers game that screwed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's improved the experience.
Nice.
As a side note, wouldn't it just be flaming arrows?
There yeah. you go. Arrows flaming.
Yeah. Here's my question. Does the crafting get in the way? Just the idea of, like, okay, to accomplish my goal, I need this particular thing. What is the process yeah. for, like, looking at that? Because I cannot imagine anything more frustrating than I need a lightning trap, and then all of a sudden I have to go through a couple of different levels of menu just to find out that, oh, you're missing this particular mechanical flower petal that is halfway across the map. Like,
yeah.
Is that a common situation?
It's not common. So it's very elegant the way they do it. So just your weapon wheel has an extra button to craft ammo for everything that you have on your quick select. So that usually flows very seamlessly. And it's pretty generous with its resources. So I've never gone to craft a type of ammo or a trap and not had enough for it. That said, you have to upgrade your overall carry capacity. And okay. It's probably just random chance, but I hit the upper limit of my carry capacity right as I got to a new area of the game where there was, like, really exciting new things to pick up, and could not pick up any of them because I didn't have the right materials to expand my carry capacity. So I'm seeing these new things that I'd never seen before. I'm like, holy shit, what's this? What is that? I can't pick it up. What the hell? Like, and so then I had to go back and craft an expanded inventory. Since that point, I've always kind of kept one eye on what do I need to expand my inventory next. I've never gone out of my way to get it, but I've just, you know, kept it in the back of my mind, and it's kept me ahead of that curve. So that the one time I did have to go and kind of grind to have the right materials was disastrous.
Okay.
But that was the one time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is the only thing that has me, like, really tempering a desire to go for it.
Mm-hmm. No, you're not going to be searching for metal flower A in field B to progress the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's, I mean, it's awesome. I'm really, really enjoying my time with it. Final thought is they have a full blown photo mode, which is fantastic.
Oh, just like Uncharted, right? Or Last of Us as well.
I think so. I'd never played around with the photo mode in Last of Us, but it's basically whenever you pause the game, you can go straight into adjusting the camera angle and all that stuff to take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been posting some of those to my Twitter as I've gone.
Neat.
And it's been good stuff.
How many hours have you put into it so far?
I would estimate about 10.
Okay.
Nice. I really love the commercials for this game. I realize that's completely random, but they with the like big muscly dude with the rocket launcher, that just makes my day.
I don't know that I've seen that.
No, I'll look it up and put it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's just a big dude. He's like, sure, you could, this is exactly it, but it's, sure, you could use, you know, a gun like this to take down a giant robot dinosaur, but a real man would use this and, like, pulls out a bow. Or not. It actually would be even more ironic if it was a real man, but, you know, something like that.
No, I found it. It's cool.
Yep, I found it. I'll put it in the show notes. It's a shitty rip from ESPN, but it's there. Yeah. You played anything else, Dennis?
I started The Inner World at Jala's suggestion. It is as charming as she says, and I'm doing the same kind of co-op take on a point-and-click adventure game that I did with Machinarium.
Oh, so you got Jen involved. Well.
Yeah. Like, it's like instead of a movie, we'll just sit and play The Inner World. It has the benefit of you can play it from the big screen without any problems.
So. Yeah.
That's nice. That's very nice. It's great. I think the game was created in German, and then there was an English, like, dub of it.
Okay.
For lack of a better term, because sometimes the timing of the dialogue and the facial animations and stuff don't quite line up. But that's a very minor thing. It's a great game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
That's me.
Cool. I'll do mine real quick just because it's nothing too new, which is Dragon Quest Builders, which is continuing to be fun. It is nice to have something great to play in bed. I'm kind of progressing slowly through the main kind of course of the game. It is nice to have a quest structure for this. As people join your town, they make requests of you. And I'm having a lot of fun building new houses for them and stuff like that. But the way it's put together is kind of cool. You have, at least where I'm at, you're uncovering different islands, and these different islands have different kinds of monsters, and these different monsters have different kind of like little civilizations or little villages, and they'll teach you different different tool designs, or I found people who will teach me how to garden, or I also found like this gigantic ruined castle that is unlike anything that I thought that I could build for myself, but it like gave me ideas for, you know, basically turning my town into a little fort. So I'm loving kind of, you know, learning these recipes and assembling a bigger city, and the way the game doles out these new recipes via these quests, I think is a very smart move, especially for, you know, the glut of crafting games that are available, let's just say, especially on PC and have been for a while. Having something that is a little bit more on rails is a nice little departure. Won't be for everybody, but it works for me.
Is that the objective of the game, is expanding the population of your city?
Yeah. You're trying to, you know, bring civilization and light back to this land that has been torn apart by the Dragon Lord.
Cool.
Or the Dark Lord, or whatever it's called. The weird little Dragon Quest Dragon Warrior shift around has ensured that I will always be messed up on the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's it is good. Especially as you start unlocking more like combat moves, like charge and spin attacks and stuff. It is a fun little action RPG, and I'm looking forward to crafting better and more weapons and stuff.
Is there any in-game way for people to show off their creations?
Not that I found, but I also haven't poked around the menus that much.
Hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions about that? Because that's really all that I have.
That sounds good.
Let's see, Ben, what do you got?
All right, I just got a couple of tiny ones. I continue playing Metal Gear Solid Revengeance. I'm still enjoying it, still way over the top. I've been forced in a situation where I have to learn the parry move in order to progress.
Yeah,
because otherwise, you just get beat by everything. Yep. But it's basically like you need to press the light attack and hold the thumbstick in the direction of the enemy and hold it in order to like block their move. And then you go into like basically the QuickTime mode. You have like a meter of, I don't know, some sort of energy of some kind. But then you use that and you can do, it's basically like a QuickTime event where time slows down, you zoom in on the enemy, and you can do any horizontal or vertical attacks that you want by pressing two different buttons. And so like that's what you use. That's basically where, like when you, like the tech video they showed where you slice the watermelon in two, usually in cutscenes and stuff, you use that ability where it's like you can slice open this airplane now if you want or something like that. So just been slowly progressing on that. Still pretty fun. I have a couple other things if there's no questions on that one.
No, I mean, I'm very happy to hear that you're continuing to go with it. Yes, the parry is necessary to know.
Yeah. 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 So we'll see how that progresses. The other, I've been playing Rocket League. It's great. And then I also went back and started playing The Witness some more this week. After watching somebody play through it, I think a couple weeks ago. Just because that environment's really cool. I had a family in town over the weekend, so I made one of my family members play the game for maybe an hour or so.
Made.
That's usually how it goes. Yeah. I just will sit someone down in my room and say, play this. I just hand him a controller and tell him nothing about the game and then watch him play it. But it's like, it's a great intuitive game, and like it, you know, it gets it, I don't know, it's fun to watch somebody like learn that sort of like language or whatever. But on top of that, I found there's a website called like Windmill, and then it's like has something else, but it's basically user submitted witness puzzles.
And so
I can drop a link in the Slack for everyone, but so it's basically just a bunch of puzzles that people can vote on, and it has a system where people can vote like whether or not it's a good puzzle, so that you can get like it's basically like Reddit for the witness puzzles. So you can get like whatever the new puzzles are or whatever the like top voted ones are, and so it's just so it's really cool. It's a lot of fun. There's a couple ones that are really good. There's more so to the point. There's a couple of users who are really good about submitting really good puzzles. So like probably like half of the top puzzles are submitted by one person in particular. So that's been fun. That's been a nice outlet for mathematical mind. Then the last thing that I got that's kind of the cool thing is I got a Steven sausage roll.
I was wondering when this would happen for you.
Yeah, I think I pulled the trigger a day or two ago, I think. But for those who haven't heard about it, this is the only reason why I heard about this game is I heard about it through the guy who made The Witness, Jonathan Blow, recommended this game pretty highly. I guess he had done playtesting on it. But that's how I heard about the game to begin with. The premise is pretty simple. You play a person with a kind of contraption that you're holding in front of you. It's very stripped down graphics. It looks like a kind of like a very rudimentary 3D Mario, even that's just on a grid where you're moving just in two directions of freedom. And then the idea is you will walk into different maps. The maps will have sausages somewhere on the map. there's land, and then there's like sea that it can, the sausages can fall into. And then there's tiles on the ground that can, that are like coals or like fire or whatever that can cook the sausages. And so your goal is to push the sausages over the cooking squares, but only one time. And on each side, if you push it over twice, they'll burn. If you push them off the map, they fall off, you lose. And then I don't know what the other condition is, but yeah, so it's very easy to burn the sausages. But it's very like, so that's all the mechanics are. And the entire game is puzzles built on those core mechanics.
Different worlds, like on the map, or different, collections of stages might have a different gimmick, to them, or like a different, way of interacting from what I understand.
Maybe I just have not run into that part yet. For the most part, it seems like every puzzle might be like a unique new like aha type thing of like how you can interact with the system. But so far, I haven't seen any mechanics besides those kind of core mechanics. So I don't know. So it's definitely a game to play if you like puzzle games. I think the way I kind of described it to myself earlier today is it kind of seems like the Dark Souls version of a puzzle game where it's like. It's really hard, like, even early on. Like, I skipped, like, maybe the first four or five puzzles and went to one. I had no idea how to figure it out, so I had to go back and try, like, some of the simpler ones to try and figure out, like, some of the mechanics of the game. But, yeah. There's some, like, weird things that you start to like pick up on, where like where the cooking spaces are on the floor, that's kind of like a one-to-one map with what side you can cook on the sausage. Mm-hmm. So like so you can figure out like, so if there's like say like two like single squares or whatever, you know, okay, well I need to cook both sides of this one side of the sausage on this heater, and then I need to cook the other ones on this one. It's weird to talk about. It's a weird skin for a game.
It sounds like this weird combination of like a Sokoban and an Alexander puzzle, but you're having to keep the geometry of this thing in your head, right?
And it's like weird how the person interacts with the sausages, because he has this thing in front of him.
Like a spatula or something, right?
Yeah, it looks like a. I don't know how to describe it. It's like maybe prongs, like a 4 or 5 prong. It's like what think if a fork had 5 prongs on it and it was 3-dimensional in the shape of a plus sign.
It's a trident.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's a pendant.
It's like a 3-dimensional trident. It's like a tri-trident. But if you turn that thing to like the right or something, that can knock like sausages to the side.
Right.
But it can also like push them upward, depending upon where you're at in relation to them. So, for example, if you are you're a person, your thing that you're holding is in front of you, and say you have a sausage immediately to your left, and you have a sausage up a square and immediately to your left, and say you turn to the left with this thing, it'll push one of them up and it'll push one of them back, which is not exactly intuitive. I mean, it kind of makes sense physics wise, but not exactly intuitive. So there's a lot of puzzles built on that. There's type of mechanics though, so. Yeah. Very simple
game,
but
no idea what you just said.
Yeah, I know.
think about your character as like something that has basically he is a 2x1 kind of block, except one of the squares is a pivot, and every time he turns, the extra square will be a physics object that can like put things around. So not only are you trying to keep in your head which sides of the sausage are cooked and which ones you need to cook, you're also keeping in your head the way that your tool is going to turn.
Yeah.
This sounds like a game that is mostly played with your hands folded in front of your face, just staring at the screen.
Yes. And thankfully they built in like an undo function on the puzzles. So as soon as you ruin something, you can just press Z to undo it. And then you can reset if you just screw yourself over.
I was going to ask if it lends itself, cause you were talking about it being the Dark Souls of puzzle games. And, a lot of times for puzzle games, the way that I learn or the way that I kind of get a feel for it is just jump in and mess around and try things.
Yeah.
And eventually you kind of just get a feel for the way the puzzles work. The undo function makes it sound like it's friendly to that versus hostile to just messing around and trying things.
Yeah. I mean, it totally allows you to try whatever you want to try. It's just that the puzzles are hard. So and there's like no information conveyed to you. Like, there's very little information conveyed to you, I guess, and so it just plops you in a puzzle and then you have to kind of figure out how to do it. So a lot of the kind of mechanics you kind of pick up as you experiment. So like you can put a sausage up to the edge of something and still be able to push it back in the middle of like landmass, but if it gets one square outside of it, then you cannot return that, so it better be cooked on what's pushed out. Which sounds weird. All of this sounds weird. So
Yeah, it's too much for me. I really appreciate the amount of complexity in it, though. Just not, just as long as I don't have to work through it.
Yeah. I definitely think this would be a fun game to stream or to watch somebody play.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That would make me so stressed out to do either. Huh. Cool. So is that all, Ben?
That's all I got.
Okay. David, over to you. Round us out.
Sure. I actually haven't been doing so much, too much. I've been kind of busy. Pretty much just been kind of playing Warframe and in between putting in applications and such. Mm-hmm. Trying to think. There's a event that just started that I'm going to get in on, but I'll probably talk more about that next week.
Okay.
An event in Warframe or an event in the real world?
Event in Warframe.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, so my understanding is kind of the way they introduce new game modes is by, like, creating a, you know, temporary event that, you know, has some story elements behind it or something like that. So apparently they're putting in some kind of, like, VIP escort modification.
Okay.
So I'll probably... probably be talking more about that next week. So in lieu of any actual content, I do have to say, I was reading the Warframe Reddit, and I think I found one of my favorite posts of all time. just someone posting with the message, "What is that melee weapon that allows you to go whoosh whoosh and kill things?" And the best part being that was enough information for people to instantly give him the correct answer.
Huh.
What was the weapon?
It's the, let me get the name. It is the Telos Boltace, which is basically a pair of tonfas that when you do a slide attack, you just generate this like energy wake behind you.
That's a lazy web for you.
Yeah. So the more of the story is, I don't know. I feel like this is the from the same world that brought you a bird fight.
Well, that sounds like an episode to me. You guys want to button it up?
Let's.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. By way of kind of admin, we're coming up on Duck Spring, the community's streaming event to support the Transactive Gender Center. I think that a handful of us on the show have some shifts for that. That is going to be next week as of the time you hear this. So from the 17th through to the 20th, we're going to be having just tons of people from the community getting in there to help raise some money. So mark your calendars, and even if you do not have the money to donate, watching and participating in chat and helping to signal boost, those are all incredibly helpful things you can do.
Yeah, I will be playing Forced Showdown.
Nice.
Which I've talked a lot of sugar about on the show. So
yeah, so people can hear it. And I think I'm going to do a RimWorld stream. So yeah. Cool. Otherwise, for this particular show, you can leave us a rating or review on iTunes. We've gotten a handful of very nice ones here recently, which I always enjoy seeing. And that does help us out a great deal, more than you know, I think. And it's more than just our egos, too. Like, it's something to do with iTunes' inscrutable algorithms.
But mostly our egos.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to pretend. You know, I'm not going to pretend that it's not that. But there's also Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, where you can support all of the shows on the network. We have been really busy launching new stuff, I'd hate to see... that slowed down. So if you haven't thought about it yet, think about it now. And of course, tell your friends about this show. If you know friends who like podcasts or like video games, or maybe like both, that is the only way that we can grow, is to have you help spread the word. Am I forgetting anything, fellas?
Well, in something that's definitely not related to the brief, the Gluttonous Duck Feed bundle supports the ACLU.
the Gluttonous? You mean the Diggity?
I don't know. I feel like it's a duck feed bundle. It should be Gluttonous.
Well, but the title, it's a reference to Buck Bumble, the Diggity Duck Bundle. Yeah. I'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can hear the you've heard it, but you're going to want to hear it again. Yeah, so thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter. See, now I'm forgetting how the ending goes.
Been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Geek the Leg. All right, who has ones they want to suggest?
Let's see. I don't have one, but I have two.
Okay, put your money where your mouth is.
They're both David ones. Ooh. I got the fish guy.
Okay.
And I got the moral of the story is I don't know.
Nice.
Okay.
Dennis, I feel like that's just the story of my life.
Dennis, what have you got?
I have losing by winning.
Okay.
I have Madden against friends. I have bird fight.
Okay, I had bird fight. I had bird fight as well.
Mm-hmm. And then a recent entry, I have the trident.
I also had that. The other one I had is Deborah the Eyes Coming.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, Deborah, the eye is coming. Okay.
I forget that. What's the context of that?
I think it was talking about playing Terrarium as a husband and wife. And arguing over where to put stuff. One of the bosses in Terraria is a gigantic floating eye.
Oh.
So Deborah the Eye is coming. Deborah! yeah. Let's see. And Dennis, you already had yours. So David, did you get all yours out?
Yeah.
Okay. I had you interviewed for a cult. Character X the Hedgehog. And long pig leather.
Long pig leather. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
I might have to thumb the scale. I know it's my own. This is super lame. Deborah the Eye is Coming is really funny.
It does.
I know it didn't.
I won't tell you no.
I know it didn't get the most votes, and I apologize for that.
Gotta go for the quality. I feel like democracy sometimes fails in certain situations. Like sometimes you have to be an auteur.
Yeah.
We have words for those situations. It's America.
Coltatorship.
Yep. Okay. So as long as you guys are not, as long as there's no salt about Deborah the Eye is Coming being the title, then.
I'm not. Yeah, okay. I liked it.
Okay.
Love it.
I'm cool.
All right. Cool. Well, I'm going to go to bed.
I'm going to play more Horizon Zero Dawn.
Neat. All right. Have a good week, everybody. Take care.
Night, guys.
Night.
Peace. Bye.
Peace.